Welcome to the Off Speed Podcast. My name is Grace. I am your host for this podcast, one where we dive into different sports and different sports stories. I'm very excited for the show we have today. First, I have three wonderful guests who are going to join me to talk about roller derby. The Omnibus person, is that the right word, from Renap, also known as Guillotine Girdle, or Gretel. Should get that right, Gretel. Along with Pure Polly and Tiny and Mighty, they're going to chat with me about roller derby, a sport I am somewhat familiar with, but they are going to teach me all about it, and you, hopefully, or if you know a bunch about roller derby, hope you're excited to hear people talk about their enthusiasm for it. After that, I have my good friend Adam, who's going to join me. Adam's been on the show before. Talk through the transfer window in the Premier League. The season has started 2 weeks in, and Adam's going to give us the top five stories of the Premier League thus far. So that is our show today. I'm going to get right into it. Let's head over and meet our roller derby gals. Welcome back. I am very excited. We are going to be chatting about roller derby, and we have not one, not two, but three guests, three roller derby players. First, I'm gonna throw it over to you, Aisha. You were the one who I reached out to be like, can we talk about roller derby? And then you assembled a whole team to chat today. Aisha, would you like to introduce yourself?
Thank you so much, Grace, and thank you for letting me come on today with a couple of my favorite teammates, Pure Polly and Tiny and Mighty. My name is Aisha, otherwise known as Guillotine Gretel, and I skated for Circle City Roller Derby, which was formerly Circle City Derby Girls from 2010 until 2016, but I really stopped skating in like 2017.
Amazing. Polly, would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Pure Polly. I have been with Circle City for 9 years. Right now, I'm currently our vice president and on the coaching committee. So making things happen.
Oh, amazing. And Tiny?
My name is Tiny, and I started the same time as Gigi, only they can't get rid of me. It is all this time later, and I'm still around. I am now considered active retired, which means I come to practice, but I don't really like to be hit all that much anymore.
That is fair. Yeah, let's talk about roller derby. I think a sport that I think like either people are, I feel like people, hopefully people are a little bit aware. There was a movie made about roller derby, I think a little while ago, but I'm not sure how much people know. I have some familiarity. I have a close friend of mine who played for a while. Unfortunately, here in Toronto, I think the league has been a little bit inactive since COVID. But maybe I'll start with you, Aisha. Would you want to like explain, like, what is roller derby? Like, the, you know, we don't have to get like nitty gritty into the rules. We'll get into the nitty gritty later, but as a concept, like, I think for people who maybe are familiar with it, what is it?
So roller derby is awesome. It is a game where the only things you need are bodies, preferably some gear for protection, skates, and tape to like make a track. And the idea of derby is you have five people on a track at the same time from each team. Four of those players are blockers, and one of those players is called a jammer, and the jammer is the person who scores points. The goal of each match, like, the jammer is going to try to get through the pack of people. You go to get your jammer through so they can score points, but you want to also block the opposing team's jammer at the same time so they don't score points.
If I remember correctly, is this where is every time the jammer gets through and past the wall, are you getting a point essentially? It can both teams be scoring points at the same time, or is there essentially like whoever is ahead is the team that is like scoring points?
So there's something called a lead jammer, and I'm going to happily let Polly and Tiny talk more about that. But I can explain like the point scoring. You have to pass each person's hips. So if there are four people on the opposing team that are blockers and you pass all four, that's 4 points. Say you only pass one, then that's only 1 point per that pass.
Can you elaborate perhaps either? How would you only perhaps pass one or two instead of if you just like can't get by, what happens?
Are you asking me?
Polly, perhaps. Yeah. Or Tiny.
Go ahead, Tiny.
Okay, so what happens is one of the jammers is able to call it off. It's whoever was in front that got through the pack the fastest without creating any penalties. So when they get done, they just tap their hips a couple times and the referees call off the jam. So if you've only passed one person at that time, you score 1 point. And if you've scored, if you've passed all four, then you would pass, you would get the 4 points.
Got it. And then is it, you know, calling it off? Is it then sort of, you know, it starts again, presumably, you know, the teams are right. Is this idea of like, more like, hockey where like now new people might come in and out, or is it typically the same people like on the track most of the time?
Well, I am a hockey fan, so I'll take this one. Yeah. So yes, it's like that. Every 2 minutes starts a new jam. But if somebody calls it off, there's 30 seconds in between to switch who is on the track.
Got it.
So it doesn't happen in hockey the same way where gameplay really doesn't stop. We stop gameplay to switch who's on the track.
Got it.
And then kind of like basketball, we have periods, or soccer, or any other sport like that. So there are 2 30-minute periods. So you have 30 minutes, one period, halftime, usually 15 minutes, and then your second period.
Polly, I'd be interested, you know, I think someone had mentioned like the amount of people you can get by without incurring any penalties. I feel like roller derby can be a pretty physical game, but what are some of the ways in which like somebody could incur a penalty?
You can get a track cut, you can get a like blocking with your head, a forearm, direction of gameplay,
tripping, illegal procedure,
low blocks,
back block.
I'm presuming a track cut is literally what is that? Cutting the like going out of the you said earlier you should like the paint on the or the tape on the to make the court. You can't step outside of the.
It could be that, or it could be that you actually cut another skater who is ahead of you.
Right.
In a way. So basically, like if we were next to each other and I knocked you out, you would have to come in behind me. And if you didn't and you went in front of me, then you cut the track.
Right. All right. I feel like the rules I think are like mostly pretty simple. Hopefully people can get, I'm a very visual person. So, for our podcast listeners, hopefully we've done a good enough job explaining sort of, the rules, I guess, typically for me, you know, in terms of like, why do we play sport? It's like the strategy, you're trying to be better than the other team. Aisha, could you talk through some of the like strategy that perhaps like some of the teams you played on, like, are trying, things that you might, you know, strategy you might use to try and score more points, get more past more people?
So like evolutions in the RHAP network, there's a lot of evolution to derby. When I first started, the starting line for where people started the set, like their 2 minutes, it was way up. And over time, people found different ways to manipulate that. So they moved it to behind, and people found new ways to manipulate that. I'm not exactly sure where it is today, but there's been a lot of evolution in terms of what we can get away with, what body parts we can use, when and how. I'm not very good at explaining derby strategy. That's why I asked 2 awesome coaches to come join me.
No problem.
But as a skater, over time, the amount of skill level required to do basic derby changed. Like it used to be, not that it was easy, but it was easier. Like, for example, when you're joining roller derby, you have to do conditioning, kind of like basketball or volleyball or any other kind of sport, and you have to pass certain minimum requirements. When I joined, it was 20 laps in 5 minutes. It sucked. Then they made it worse and changed it to 25 laps in 5 minutes, which was like, I smoked at the time too, and someone who smokes a pack and a half a day and plays roller derby, like it was not always a good mix. However, you train your body to be able to do so. So to me, like the expectations, not that they were bad, kind of like when you're in elementary school and you anticipate the next year, you're kind of scared, but then you get there and you're like, okay, I can learn.
Right. That makes sense. Polly or Tiny, do either of you like, the evolution of strategy, if you will? What are some of the, like, you know, are there common strategies that teams often employ? Is it always evolving based on, you know, skill level, ability, etc.?
So there are different things that you can do. When we first started, roller derby was much faster. And so sometimes it was which team can skate faster to make it harder for the jammers, because they had to skate faster. Then roller derby became a slower game. And so then it became, well, what would be more beneficial for our team, to try and just block their jammer for as long as we can, or to try and get our jammer out as quickly as possible? Because you're playing offense and defense at the same time.
Right.
That strategy is constantly changing.
Right. That makes sense. Polly, you have anything to add?
I would just say for evolution and for jammers, like having jammers that are smart and knowledgeable of knowing like where the other jammer is, because you can do a lot of point control that way. If I'm the jammer and the other person's coming too, and we both get past two people, we both got 2 points. So that's a wash. But if I can get past two and they get none, then I've won. So a lot of it is knowing what's going on the track. But then you have other times when you don't think about points, when you have blockers in the penalty box and you want them on the track, so you stay longer. So it does change.
Because there is a penalty box. We talked about penalties before, but there is a penalty box that can be sent to you. And therefore, presumably you have on the track, you have less people to pass. Every time you pass them, though, you as the jammer on the opposite team does get a point for passing the person in the penalty box, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Those are called not points, not on the track.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So interesting. So you'd want to stay on the track longer so that the penalty can run out, because otherwise they're just going to still be in there. That's interesting. I mean, for me, you know, I talked a little bit about strategy. We might get back to this as we go, but I think for me, the thing that I thought was really interesting about roller derby, what is the culture of roller derby? There are men's leagues, but I think predominantly, right, female or non-male leagues, I guess, seem to be the most common. I don't know. Anybody want to chat a little bit about like the culture of how did roller derby? I don't know. You know, let's go into like the history, but perhaps like what like drew you, any of you folks, to roller derby as a sport? Yeah, Tiny.
So I went and saw the movie Whip It with my sisters on opening night, because I grew up roller skating. And I said, boy, if they had that here, I would totally do it. I had a sister that said she would too, and another sister that really thought we were crazy. So when we went out into the lobby, there were people that played derby out there offering you like derby names. They weren't real names, but you know, they were just fun names that you could take. And I found out that there was tryouts. And so that is actually how I got started with it. And I forgot what the original question was.
What drew you to roller derby? What is it about the culture of roller derby that has that drew you in, but also has kept you playing and participating for so long?
So I like that it accepts everyone. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you are tall, small, big, thin. It really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter your orientation. Everyone is accepted in roller derby and welcomed. Mm-hmm. That's what really sucked me in and kept me going, is I have friends that I never would have met in any other way, and they have made my life so much better. It's the community.
Yeah, I saw that's like the thing that I saw. It's what my friend, who I'll shout out their roller derby name, their Fleetwood Smack, which I always think is an incredible roller derby name. Awesome. Just found this community of people. It was very like, you know, it had this like punk rock feel, even if not everybody was, you know, punk rock. For me, so Fleetwood Smack is actually the first person I ever came out to as trans. And I remember going to a roller derby game and seeing a trans woman playing roller derby and being like, that's cool. Cause like, as in terms of like thinking about coming out was a thing that I, you know, sports felt like a thing that like, I don't think I play sports. And I, not that I ever went and played roller derby, but it was so cool to see somebody playing in the league, on Smack's team. But Polly, what about you? What is it about the culture of roller derby?
Well, I went and watched my sister-in-law play roller derby, and I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going. So I went to the next practice, and I've been doing roller derby ever since. And then I went down to Circle City, and I've been there, and it's just everybody there. It just, we're a family. It's not just, you know, oh, that's my teammate. No, that's my family. Because we do so much together. We spend so much time together between practices, games, away games, just everything. So I would say that is definitely what keeps me here.
What about you, Aisha?
I'm going to embarrass myself and say a lot of things about myself I would normally not say, like,
yeah,
like, but for me, when I joined in 2010, I grew up as a rink rat too, like Tiny and probably Polly, like in and out of the roller skating rink all the time with my friends. But in 2009-ish, 2010, I relapsed really bad. It was the worst relapse I'd ever had, and I lost a lot of friends. And after that time, it was important to me to figure out how was I going to meet new people, get my life back on track, and continue to work out, because I had been working out with one of my friends I relapsed with. So I had gone to a punk rock night, which is a thing they do here in Indianapolis on Saturdays at one of the dive bars. And there were flyers for one of the skating teams here in Indy. And at the time, I remember looking at it and thinking, I could do that. It's just roller skating. And look, like typing in Indianapolis Roller Derby and seeing that they had two teams. But one of the teams was really competitive. And if you've seen me or know me, I am not competitive, like at least not like that. But the other team sounded more recreational and fun and like inclusive. So I went to their fresh meat class with Tiny almost 12 years ago. In October, for the two of us. Yes, I'm pretty sure 12 years. It's like, that is just crazy to me. But not only did I meet all these amazing people who came from all kinds of walks of life, like I'm a social worker. There are scientists, there are stay-at-home moms, there are lawyers, nurses, doctors, like cosmetologists, you name it. There's probably someone like that on our team. So you get to meet all these different types of people from all kinds of different backgrounds, which was really cool. And like Tiny and Polly were both saying, the culture, the inclusivity, like some of the traveling, the away games that we had are some of my favorite memories. I might not remember the bout that we played or how well I did, but I remember how much fun I had in Cape Girardeau. I remember how much fun I had at the Uranus Fudge Factory in Missouri. Like, those are just things that you do not forget. I remember how crazy it was the night that we got to sign a hot dog at the Hot Dog Bun Museum in Ohio. Like, it was nuts. Roller derby is just an amazing community of people. It's an amazing sport. I am not thin. You can't see me, but I am a big girl, not as big as I used to be. And to have something where it was like my hips are good for something. And that never happened to me. Like growing up, I grew up in a small town in Ohio in the 90s. It was still very waif-like for women, and I never look like that. So like joining somewhere where they're like, your hips are awesome for me, it was a confidence booster. And like Guillotine Gretel really became a persona that I could take on anywhere, at work, with other people. Like if you think you're gonna F with me, you thought wrong. I'm Gigi and I'm about to chop your head off. I don't think so. And I don't know that I would have gotten there without roller derby.
That is so awesome. I mean, I appreciate you sharing that story tremendously, like, you know, publicly on a podcast. It's very cool. I think that, I'd be, you know, talking about the city that like most leagues being all female. Do you think there's something to this idea, like that, you know, sports has always, you know, has been a place that I think like women have had to sort of like try and non-binary folks and all those sorts of folks trying to like edge their way in. I think even at like a national level, right? Like the WNBA, probably the most successful league. And, you know, I don't think it's nearly enough as much attention as like, well, certainly not as much as the NBA, but this idea of it like sort of becoming this grassroots sort of like, it feels like most leagues, right, are like run by folks who do other things, as you were talking about, Aisha. All these people come from different backgrounds, like being these self-organized, mostly female sporting cultures, right, this or leagues. You know, I think there's something to that, like inclusivity, the nature of that.
So I'd like to actually touch on that. Yeah. While we are part of the Women's Flat Track Derby Association, which is people that identify as female.
Yep.
There are also a men's team in right. town for us. And I actually just coached a co-ed team at Nationals.
Oh, cool.
So there really is all different kinds of roller derby. It just depends what you're looking for. Right. This was the right place for me to skate at, but there's something out there really for everyone.
Yes. I mean, Tony, you talked about like coming out of the movie Whip It and like seeing that there's these folks out there, you know, as you talked about like finding tryouts, like how could people go about finding roller derby to play? I mean, the internet exists, but if you had any general advice for people, what would it be?
So I would say if you have no idea where roller derby is around you, I would go to WFTDA, and which is our national organization, and there's a list of teams. You can just type in the area that you live and it will find a team for you, because we are everywhere.
Yeah, that's cool. And I think, you know, probably all levels of like, you know, you talked about like not being super competitive. I'm sure there's something out there for different people. I think to me the most interesting thing, not the most interesting thing, but a thing that I like think is so unique and so fun. I'm a big pro wrestling fan, and I always feel like whenever I hear a little bit like roller derby names, which all of you introduced yourselves and gave us your roller derby names, I feel like it has this like theatrical pro wrestling vibe to it. That's like this very fun thing. I think roller derby has that not a lot of other sports are doing. Does someone want to explain like where, I don't know if you know where it comes from, but like what do you think it like does to the league in terms of like everybody having names, roller derby names?
I don't know where it comes from, but I know when we started, like today, I know a lot of skaters go by their real names and they don't use their derby names. But when we started, there were spreadsheets and you'd have to get your name approved to right. even be able to use it. Like, it was crazy. More embarrassment for me. A friend of mine, Catherine, helped me pick my derby name. She loves alliterations, and I am a hot mess. When I was in high school, during a very odd gothic skater phase that I had, I might have also fell in love with Hanson. Of Mbop fame. Oh. Uh-huh. And, you know, I had a teacher.
As we do.
As one does.
Yeah.
I had a teacher, my history teacher, actually. He used to call me Hanson and Gretel.
Oh, amazing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Gretel stuck throughout the rest of high school into my 20s. I joined derby when I was 25, I think 27, something like that. Polly's dead. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's so bad. I know. But so yeah, Gretel came back. I love Marie Antoinette. She's one of my most favorite females in history. She was just done so dirty. So getting a guillotine with Gretel seemed like a perfect fit for me. And both of my kids also love Hanson. I decided to Jane. It's not my fault.
You have stylized guillotine. Is that just because to your point earlier, but like there being spreadsheets, was this something that you had to like choose, or you thought it, you liked the way, because people look at the
approved.
Right.
So there are lots of other guillotine things, and right. to avoid the hassle of requesting the approval, waiting to see if it got approved, trying to come up with something else if it didn't, it was easier to try to change the spelling, which went through.
Yeah.
But then no one could pronounce it. So
I know. As soon as I had to, like, it was, I think, only moments before the podcast, like, oh, guillotine. Oh, that makes sense. I got it. Polly or Tiny, do either of you, you could, I'm intrigued how people pick their name, because I think it's like this thing that then it gets attached to you. So if you're willing to share that, that would be amazing. But if not, like, what is, like, having a name in roller derby mean to you? Like, what do you think it does for you as, like, an athlete in this league? Yeah, Tiny.
So for me, it made me strong. So the first name that I wanted was Black and Blue. Mm-hmm. And they declined it because there was a guy named Blake and Blue. And it was just too close for them.
Okay, yeah.
Right? So I put it out to my friends. I'm like, who has a name for me? And Tiny and Mighty stuck, because Ann is my real first name, my legal first name. Everybody calls me Tiny. Mm-hmm. But it's my legal first name. And so putting that in my name just made it, I don't know, it made it feel like me, only better.
Yeah, you turned up to 11. I think it's great.
Also, we each have a number, and sometimes our numbers mean something too.
Right.
So my number is 4'11", which is also my height.
That's right.
When Gigi was saying earlier that, like, people appreciated her hips, I was the one that appreciated her hips.
Right.
If my coach ever asked me to jam, which is the point scorer,
yes,
they'd say, who do you want on the track with you? Every time I'd say Gigi.
And what is it? I mean, I was talking about names, but in terms of, like, strategy, you're talking about, like, because it's just that she could block, right? She could block for you, get someone out of the way. Is that?
She was shepherding, right?
Yeah,
she would smash a whole wall. Like, she would clear the row.
Hulk smashing was my favorite. Goosebumps. Like, my job would be to protect my jammer. So if anyone was coming after them, I'm going to hip check them to hell. There are pictures. I have some pictures from a team that Polly formerly skated with, where I hit a girl so hard, she, like, flew out of bounds and she's sitting on the floor. She looks dazed. Like, there's photo progressions of it. So you see, like, me and her flying and then her on the ground.
Your
and
hips.
Smiling. Yeah, me went like this and smiling away.
That is amazing.
And while Gigi has that picture, I have a picture of me being the one that flew 20 feet.
Yeah.
It was really cool, though. The jammers would ask, like, could you hit me before practice? Like, who says that? Like, hey, can you hit me for a few laps so I can, like, warm myself up?
Right.
And it was like, yeah, I can. And it was helpful, you know, whereas, like, especially being a bigger girl, when you play sports, people don't choose you for things because they look at you and they assume that you're weak or you can't be strong. Like, there was a skater named Skinny Minnie in Kentucky. This broad. She was like 6'5". I'm 5'2" on a good day.
Yeah.
She wasn't 6'5", but she was at least twice
tall. Yeah.
She was maybe 300 plus pounds. And they told me, Gigi, you're on Skinny Mini. No, I'm not. Right? Like, she annihilated me. But then I also had the reverse where girls would think, like, oh, there's the big girl. Let's go get her. And then I would hit them, or they would hit me, bounce off me, and I'd smile at them and then hit them to hell and laugh and go about my business, and they learn real quick.
That's good. Yeah, I think did the nature of the sport, right, that you have people playing offense, defense at the same time. You have the jammer, like, that different people, different body types could be, you know, good at the same sport is really cool. Polly, what about your name, or what having a name sort of means for you?
Well, my name, actually, when I first started, was Tequila Sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
But there was another gal on Circle City when I transferred, and her name was Tequila Slammer, so I couldn't have my name. So everybody always called me Polly anyway, so that's how we came up with Pure Polly. I care more about my number than my name. my number is my daddy's birthday. So that's, you know, that's one thing I'm like, please don't make us go down, because mine's a 4-digit. I'm 1215. So if they ever make us go down to the 3 or 2, I'm doomed.
Yeah, I noticed that. That's another thing. Yeah, you can have larger numbers, right?
Tiny, that's another evolution. My original number was for my daughter, my oldest daughter, who is 21 now. She used to come to practice with me from 10 until she was old enough to stay home. So 10 to teenage years.
Yeah.
And my number was 914 OZ, something like that. But it stood for her birthday and her nickname. And then over the years, you couldn't have the little numbers anymore. So then it was just 914, which is what it is now.
You say OZ, you have letters in there? Is that what you had?
I used to be able to. Yeah.
And it wasn't because I'm Canadian and we pronounce it Zed. I promise. Yeah.
You do pronounce it Zed. I forgot.
Tiny. Yeah.
Yeah. So with numbers, my daughter also plays on our team. My daughter is 32, which leads you to believe, like, I was older than her when I started. I was in my late 30s when I started.
Right.
But her skater name is Hit Her Up Style. Remember that Blue Cantrell song? Like the oops. Okay. So anyway, her numbers were 00PS for oops.
That's
and great. That worked great for her until we had to change our numbers to just being numbers.
Yeah.
And so my husband also plays, and he had his birth year, which was 70, for his number. And so she chose 90 for her number to go after her birth number.
That's cute. It's so nice. Your whole family plays. That's amazing.
I also have a brother-in-law and 3 cousins that play.
Wow. Family
Tiny
affair.
Started a, like, whole family of derby.
Yeah. I know that some of the leagues, you know, especially here in Toronto, I believe that the Toronto Derby League that my friend played in, I don't think they've run anything. At least their, like, Instagram is pretty inactive. How did COVID sort of affect Circle City Roller Derby is the league you all played for? Yeah, Polly.
Well, we all decided to keep paying dues because we have our own practice place, and we wanted to make sure that, you know, when COVID came back to where it was more manageable, we were able to go back. So for us, it was maintaining the warehouse and then coming back slowly. And then this last year, we were able to actually have a season. Amazing. It was so great.
When does the season, I'm not sure if this differs based on, like, where people are. Is there a typical roller derby season?
Ours is usually about April to July. Mm-hmm. But it changes. Every league seems to be different. It goes around whenever, I think a lot of leagues go off of when the WIFTA makes their, like, championship brackets. So they know that they are in line to go to that for the higher level teams.
Makes sense. Yeah, Danny, you talked about coaching a team to nationals. Did I hear that correctly earlier? Yeah.
It's a different style of roller derby. It's called USARS, and it's actually a much faster paced version of than what we play. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was this past weekend, and the team is called B-Side, and they came in second at nationals.
Oh, amazing. Congratulations. That's awesome. Yeah. What is the highest level? Like, it does seem to, from my sense, it seems mostly regional based, but you folks could enlighten me. You talked about WIFTA, Women's Flat Track Derby Association. I'm sure there's other leagues. What is, like, sort of the, you know, if you're really good at roller derby and you wanted to, like, make it all, you know, the highest level you could, what does that sort of look like?
Well, you would get all the way to the world championships. Mm-hmm. So that's been held in a few different countries, but it is usually the United States.
Yes, that makes sense.
Which makes it really expensive for people outside of the United States to attend.
With the world championships, is this a thing where because there's some sports where the world championships end up being like ultimate, we were talking about the other day, that it's like it's your team makes it to championships. Would that be the same here, that like your team would make the championships, or are there also like a national teams that you could be, you know, similar hockey, you're talking about liking hockey. I'm a Canadian hockey fan. Where like there's a Canadian team that's like the best Canadians all get pulled in, or is it more likely that it's your team gets to a championship?
It is the team that makes it to the championship. Now, there are special circumstances. Like right now, we have tryouts that will be happening in a couple weeks for Team Indiana. And they'll have a battle of the all-star teams, and each state will battle each other out. And I think that happens in the fall in Pennsylvania. But for the most part, it's your team, not an individual.
Okay, that makes sense to me. I wanted to come back as how COVID affected you. Talked about the first thing. What could people do if playing roller derby isn't in their interest, but supporting roller derby, watching roller derby? What can people do to get involved at a spectator level?
I can take that one.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are so many things that you can do as a spectator. You can come and you can buy a ticket, and we'd love to have fans.
Yeah.
There are trackside seating. So if you're not afraid of somebody falling in your lap, you can sit right on the floor right outside of our track, or there's usually bleachers and chairs that you can sit into. You could also choose to become a non-skating official. Our non-skating officials are the people that run the penalty box. They keep the score, things like that. They write down what the referees tell them. And if you're good on skates and you want a referee, we love our referees.
You also get a cool nickname, right?
Something you typically hear, but we actually really love our referees.
Yeah. The referees often have nicknames as well. Right?
And the referees, some of them go through extensive training, and like we have, we're very fortunate to have two very high level referees in our organization. Ogre was part of WIFTA championships. And then I believe that Bambi Lance was part of men's roller derby champs. So we are very lucky.
I want to touch on something Polly mentioned too about dues. Derbies, like skater owned and operated.
Right.
So we pay dues monthly. Like Tiny, I'm actively retired. I do not go to practice because I haven't paid for my insurance, but I will be doing that before the end of the year. I promise, Polly.
This podcast is actually a trap to make sure you paid your insurance.
Yes.
Yeah, we got you. Yeah.
I don't pay without insurance. There's injuries in roller derby.
Yes.
But skaters pay dues every month into their league, and that money is used to like get a bouting space or a practice space or pay for people to come and do a master class with us or pay for other things that the league would need. Other things, as someone who's not actively skating, someone who could tell you, like getting a season's pass is great, or buying merch from when you are at a bout to support your league. If you hear about another team, going out and supporting them. I think there's a lot of different ways people can support leagues in their communities if they're open to doing that.
It's really fun to go to. It's really fun. I really enjoyed the few times I've been. I think that as I said, I'm like a very visual learner. But like as soon as you can like pick up like what's happening, the strategy of it, it's a really fun. It's a really cool sport. Is there anything else you want people to know about roller derby? Anything that we didn't get to chat about? Anything about the sport itself, or getting involved, or watching it, or anything?
We forgot a position.
Oh, okay.
So a pivot is someone who can be a blocker or a jammer. And sometimes part of the strategy for the jammer, especially if they get tired or they're getting beat up on a lot, they can transfer their helmet cover or their helmet panty with the pivot, and then the pivot becomes the jammer. And that can also serve to like kind of confuse the other team, at least momentarily, while they switch.
Yeah, so typically the jammer, you talked about like a helmet penny, like a wrap that can kind of go on the helmet, and you could take it off and give it. What are the rules behind being able to do that? Because I assume you just can't do it whenever you want. What would the or can you? Yeah, Paula.
The only way that you're able to pass the star is you have to be in bounds and in play.
Yeah. Okay. And you can switch. Yes. And you said it's to confuse the opposition or if the jammer's getting tired.
Yeah, a lot of times, sometimes you'll pull the panty off, even if you don't know if you're going to pass it, you may be stuck and you're like, oh, well, I might. But then the blockers are looking at both of you, kind of like, who's going to have it?
Right.
And it makes it sometimes easier to get through.
Right. Tiny.
Roller Derby is the most accepting community that I have ever known. If you are old, young, black, white, Hispanic, it doesn't matter who you are welcome in roller derby.
Yes. I you know, you can speak better to that than I ever could, but I do think it's like one of the things that like intrigued me so much. And going to the game, they're like just sitting there watching, like it did just have this like it has both this like punk rock aesthetic with this like, yeah, you're anybody's welcome here, we're gonna have a fun time. It's like, I think to the point you were talking earlier, I think before we came on, about how we're gonna do interactions, and you folks talking about that your teams have these intro songs and everybody goes around, everyone gets their own lap and gets introduced. It's like has this like lighthearted funness to it that I think a lot of like sometimes major sports, like the major sports are like, it's like, God, it's so boring. Like, just be like more fun. I don't know. Just like, you don't have to have these old written rules about what sports needs to be. Like, it can be whatever we want it to be, and that should be fun. While also then being like an intense physical game. You just said like, yeah, injuries will happen, you know, bruising. I'm sure you've seen a lot of injuries over your time. So I just think it's like, yeah.
We used to have a photo album called The Gallery of Bruises, where we would just upload pictures of our bruises into it because you become so proud of them, which also sounds crazy. Like, you can't go to work and tell someone, oh my gosh, look at all these fingerprints I got down my arm, because they think something's wrong and want to get help for you. And you're like, no, it's just playing roller derby.
Yeah. Yes. So, I have my own physician assistant at the emergency room. Her name is Angela.
Yeah.
And every time I go to the emergency room, which has been a number of times,
I'm sure, yes.
They always ask me, do you feel safe at home? And I always say, yes, I do this to myself. But I do have a plate and 9 screws.
Wow.
In my leg.
Wow. But
yeah, find yourself an Angela that will know that it was roller derby.
I don't have an Angela, but I do have a wonderful Dr. Fletchall. And I fractured my hip my first season and to injure it over the following 6 years, which is why I retired. But I've seen like Tiny's ankle getting broken. I gave a girl a concussion once on accident. She tripped me and my knee landed on her head. And
that'll do it.
Was her fault, and she got penalized for it while she was being taken to the hospital. It was when we played in that weird sportsplex in Indy. It was by, you know what I'm talking about, Tiny?
Teammates nodding, yes.
Like a weird bout that we couldn't be in our regular bouting space at a hockey rink. So we went to this other place close to it, and it was all weird. But I've seen people's teeth get knocked out, and then we had to find it.
You all are badass,
That is not the worst. The worst one I've ever seen is when we played up at South Shore. This poor gal, she sat down, like, as soon as it happened, she started screaming, flopped her leg, it was flipping over back and forth, and she was like, I knew it was going to break. I knew it. Get me off the track.
Wow.
So to talk about how great the roller derby community is,
Gigi
was talking about how we played in this weird sportsplex. That weird sportsplex was set up for basketball and volleyball, and the track wasn't big enough.
Right.
We had all of the skaters from the Race City Rebels and our skaters from Circle City Roller Derby get together, and we had to build an extension onto the track just for that one day.
Because
we didn't have enough safety, enough room, everybody had to bring pillows from their house to cushion us.
Yes.
I mean, I feel like this is the sort of like, you know, it's run by you, like, right? It's like, is this not like this, like, I special mean, league? Yeah.
You can ask the doctors at the emergency room too. We're great for some wrapping you up and splitting you up to go to the hospital. They said we did great work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're taking care of it all. We're skating, we're running the business, we're fixing medical. Everybody.
Yeah.
One other thing I wanted to mention, one of my goals, this was not one of my goals. But it was an opportunity that was presented to me the year before I retired, and it was something called Bodies by Derby. And Bodies by Derby was a photo project that was done to showcase lots of different types of people who play roller derby. Some of it was by age, some of it was based on body type, some of it was by race. The one that I got to participate in was Black roller derby players, and it was just so incredible for me to meet so many other people who look like me and who are playing derby from all over the place. And I don't know, I can't really explain it, but as someone who doesn't have that happen all the time, at least not growing up or in my younger years, being given that opportunity to play with so many people that looked like me at the same time, it was just truly incredible. One of the most incredible things I've ever gotten to participate in.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the stuff. There's some really cool, they did a bunch of series, it looks like. One of like derby athletes over 40, derby athletes are gender nonconforming. That's really cool. Yeah.
My daughter was in the one where they were suspended in air.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, this has been tremendous. You're all badass. Derby is cool, fun, amazing, very unique. People should work, check it out. At least watch the movie Whip It, I guess. At the very least. Yeah, Tanya. Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to Aaron Jackson, too. Aaron Jackson, who is our gold medal Olympian in ice speed skating, started out as a speed skater in inlines, and then started playing roller derby. Somebody saw her playing roller derby and then decided to train her on ice. She had never been on ice before. It was her roller skating that actually gave her training to become a gold medal Olympian.
That is awesome. The first ever Black American as well to win a medal in speed skating. That is awesome.
And a great
roller derby world. That's awesome. That's so cool.
Are we still getting roller derby in 2 years in the Olympics?
No.
Women's? No. Okay. Well, that's sad. Never mind. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's there's some weird stuff, I think. Yeah, it was included in the bid, but I don't think it ended up making it. It'd be really cool to see it at the Olympics.
I might need to ask Akiva.
Yeah, get Akiva.
I know. Yes.
Yeah.
He's going to outed me.
Yeah. all right. This was amazing. Do any of you have anything you'd want to promote or plug? We've talked about Circle City Roller Derby, but if you have anything else, can we find you anywhere on Twitter, anything like that?
I don't do any other podcasts, but... I do the Ombudsperson stuff for Robin Akiva Anita podcast.
Yes.
I am watching all the Big Brother things right now. The coverage has been wonderful.
Yes.
You can find me on Twitter at Aisha NW.
Amazing.
I'm not cool enough to be anywhere but here.
You are cool enough. You are cool. You play roller derby. Yeah, you're very cool. Yeah. Twitter should not be the litmus test for are you cool. But thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much, Polly, Tiny, Aisha. This was so great.
Thanks so much, Grace.
Welcome back. We have 2 weeks worth of Premier League under our belt. So I thought I would invite my good friend Adam back to chat about what's been going on in the Premier League. Adam, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm very good. Thank you. Thanks for having us on, Grace. Good to be back and looking forward to discussing what has been a pretty lively start to the season in the Premier League.
We'll get to the Premier League, actually, but I do want to ask you, you're a Blackburn Rovers fan. How are they doing so far?
Doncaster Rovers.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's embarrassing. Doncaster Rovers. How are the Doncaster Rovers doing? There shouldn't be two Rovers teams.
There's four. Rovers teams. Yeah, Blackburn are the best one, to be fair.
Okay. In Canada, there's the Canadian Football League. So American football. And for a while, there was two teams named the Rough Riders, how does that happen in a team that has like a league that has 10 teams? I'll forgive there being multiple Rovers. Doncaster in League Two, right?
That's right. Yeah. So we're in the fourth level of English football now. Yeah. We're actually, we're doing well so far. We're unbeaten. And we've, we've just won again, our most recent game. We've scored late goals in pretty much every game this season. Yeah. So we seem to be a bit of a late specialist. Two wins, two draws, and both wins have been in injury time. So
okay,
happy with it so far.
All right. Let's chat about the Premier League. I've been following my team, Liverpool, and been whelmed by their start to the season. I'm sure Liverpool will come up in this conversation, but I asked you to pick sort of like, are there like five top stories? You were like, nowhere else to start other than Manchester United.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can start anywhere but with Man United. They've just had such a bad start to the season. And for me, they are the big story at the moment. And I think that, I mean, journalists and newspapers and stuff are just going to be having an absolute field day with them. It's just been, I don't know what's going on with them. They've tried to reset everything this season, and new manager trying to get some new players in, which hasn't gone too well. And they just look a bit of a mess at the moment. Obviously, they've lost both games on the bottom of the table, which I don't think Man United have been bottom of the Premier League in maybe ever. I'm not sure they've ever been bottom of the Premier League, to be honest. They used to be up there, top four, top five at very least. You know, they want to be challenging for titles, and it's just not been happening. So I'm really not sure.
Two games in, but big surprise. They lose to Brighton on opening weekend 2-1, and they lose to Brentford 4-0. What's going on? I mean, you talked about like getting some new people in. It's not quite working. Like, two games. They play Liverpool next week, which should be interesting. Surely they can bounce back. This is not like, how much does like losing? There's often the saying that you can't win, a season in the first like month, but you can lose it. You can lose the league in the first month. How bad is this for Man United?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's only two games and you'd like to think that they will turn it around. But I think it's been the performances as well. You know, Erik ten Hag's come in as manager. They seem to finally want to change philosophy a bit, change how they want to run things. They've got a different chief executive who's, in charge above him now. Richard Arnold's taken over from Ed Woodward. And I think ten Hag's maybe trying to do too much too soon with the players that he's got. Like the big problem for them against Brentford was the playing out from the back and trying to build up the play. I mean, it just went all wrong. De Gea made a big mistake with the opening goal, dropped it in his net. Second goal, trying to play out from the back, Eriksen got tackled in his own penalty area. All of a sudden, it's 2-0 after 20 minutes. And no matter who you're playing against, it's an uphill battle. And I think the way that it's gone so far on the pitch has been reflective of what's happening off of it. I mean, they've really struggled to get players in that they want. There's been a lot of talk, obviously, about Ronaldo. Maybe he wants to leave because they're not in the Champions League, which is about on brand for him. But it's just a mess, isn't it? I don't think Man United fans are having a very good time, and everyone else is certainly enjoying it, because I think everyone growing up, everyone who's in the 20s, 30s and 40s has grown up with Man United being really good, being one of the best teams, Sir Alex Ferguson era and David Beckham and Eric Cantona and all that. So it's quite nice actually seeing them having a bit of struggle, even if it only lasts a few weeks, which it probably will. They'll probably turn it around, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of people my age who they got into soccer, Premier League, a little bit younger than me, then there are a lot of Man United fans. I believe a friend, Puya, podcast here is a Man United fan. So apologies to Puya for the beginning of the season. But I mean, if you look at last year's table, Man City only lost three games. Liverpool only lost two. The chance of like losing two games at the season is really bad news. But it is kind of fun. I think the most interesting thing to me coming and being in this league is that there's so little, it feels like there's a less turnover at like the top of the tables than in sometimes in North American sports, where teams in North America go through these cycles. And so, to have a team show up, Manchester United, and like immediately, like potentially like, bottoming out for now, again, it's two games, it's very 2 weeks of the season. It's very fascinating. Yeah. Yeah. What's next? What else? Where do we want to go? Where do we want to go next? Forest and Bournemouth both have wins already. Only two teams are undefeated, I think, so far. Man City and Arsenal. These two promoted teams getting wins under their belt early on.
Yeah, all three new promoted teams, I think, have made a good start. Obviously, again, it's only two games, isn't it? But, Nottingham Forest came up through the playoffs last year. Bit of a surprise. They kind of came up on the rails and came from nowhere. One of those teams that comes into the playoffs with momentum and makes it count. And then they've beaten West Ham this weekend, who have been solidly in Europe for the last couple of years. So they're a good team. And It was a good win for them on Sunday. I did watch a bit of that game, and they did really well. After struggling really in the opening game at Newcastle, they got beat 2-0 at Newcastle on the first weekend. But they look all right. Bournemouth, tough one this weekend away at Man City. They were never really going to do out there, but did really well against Aston Villa in the first weekend. So for them to get off and running with a win, really good as well. I think often the promoted teams can struggle early on, and then that's kind of when the momentum goes against them and they lose all of the goodwill from getting promoted. And then mm-hmm. you often see those teams struggle, and then, you know, the injuries and the lack of squad depth kind of catches up. That may well happen to these teams, but both Bournemouth, Forest and Fulham, to be fair, you know, they got a draw with Liverpool on the opening day. I think they've all made encouraging starts, and maybe might surprise a few. Certainly Forest, I think, might surprise a few.
Is this the season to do it, though? The World Cup going to happen right smack dab in the middle? I believe the way it's working, right, is that there still be games, Premier League games happening. Am I correct in that assumption that these big teams are potentially going to lose a lot of points, or at the very least, if the games aren't happening, even if it's a pot, it is a break, right? Their players are going to go play a bunch. I know that as being a Liverpool fan, I've heard quite a bit from Klopp about balanced scheduling. It's like, gets very annoyed at all these tournaments and things. And yeah, this year FIFA's like, how about an entire World Cup right in the middle of the season? Is that like, that seemingly that seems like can only be an advantage for some of these teams that like their players aren't going to go play in a big tournament, right?
Yeah, well, it should be. I mean, this has never happened before and probably won't ever happen again, where the World Cup's in the middle of the season. Obviously, Liverpool, Man U, Man City, all the big sides are pretty much got a full squad of internationals. And to be fair, Liverpool have got some of their best players, like Salah, won't be at the World Cup just because Salah's international team, Egypt, didn't qualify. But yeah, right. That might throw up some interesting results in the second half of the season. I think when we get to January, February, March, we could see some really interesting ones there, because obviously your Forests, your Fulhams, your teams who are at the back end of the table, they've got some players, probably all of them have got a few players, might be in World Cup teams, but maybe not players in teams who you'd expect to go deep in the World Cup, you know, whereas the top teams have got, obviously, players who play for the top countries as well.
Full break, right? Like I was incorrect, right? I assume it's a full break for the teams.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's 3 to 4 weeks, I think, while the World Cup's on. So some of those smaller teams will get basically their full squad for just training and getting a bit of rest in the middle of the season, which obviously they don't normally get. I'm sure that will benefit a few. You might see some of those teams lower down the table in November shoot up the league after they come back from the World Cup. And then, squad depth will be a big part of it, I suppose. But, it will be a bit.
You could argue the momentum of like playing, like being off for a few weeks is the other piece that, like, you know, you could argue the exact opposite. So I'm sure there'll be a mix. Some of those teams might be find the rest very useful, use the training, and some of them won't be as useful. All right. What about talking about Gabriel Jesus starting off at Arsenal?
Yeah, I was really impressed with Gabriel Jesus. I think he's kind of gone under the radar a bit. Obviously, football fans and sports fans in general, I think they like shiny new things. They like to see, you know, players moving to other teams. And everyone's been talking about Haaland and Nunes, particularly this summer. They've been like the two big transfers, both strikers, both signed for the top two teams, you know, Man City and Liverpool, respectively. There, Jesus has gone the other way. He's gone from Man City to Arsenal. He did pretty well at Man City, but he was never seen as like the main guy. He was always the secondary striker to Sergio Aguero for years. And then last year, even though he was there as kind of the only striker City had, they often played without a striker. They often played like guys like Foden and Sterling as kind of like just forward players who didn't play as goal scorers, and obviously City still won the league. So I think he felt a bit pushed out. He's gone to Arsenal. A lot of people have said it's a pretty good fit. You know, Arsenal needed a top striker, centre forward, who can kind of make that difference. And I've really, really impressed with Jesus so far. He did pretty well on the opening day. Arsenal beat Crystal Palace in the first match on the Friday night. He didn't score in that one, but he looked like he was running the line well, leading the front end of the team pretty well. And then on Saturday against Leicester, absolutely brilliant. Two goals, two assists in a 4-2 win. I mean, the first goal was one of the best goals I think you'll see. He's just got the ball in the penalty area to his feet, no backlift, no run onto it or anything. He's just lofted it over the goalkeeper into the far corner, set them on the way to a really big win. I think he's going to score a lot of goals this season. He certainly started off very well. And I just think maybe he's not had the attention over the summer when everyone's been talking about, you know, the big money moves. And I mean, it did cost a fair bit of money, but, you know, when Haaland and Nunes particularly, they're the two that stick out to me, have been the big signings that everyone's waiting to see them get lots of goals. Jesus is the one that's popped up straight away and looked like he fits the bill right off the bat for Arsenal. And I think he's in for a good season.
Yeah, Arsenal right up at the top of the table. Again, all of our points countered by like two games, but they haven't lost yet. So, yeah, it's fun. You know, a team I would like to be at the top of the table and yet do not have a win yet. My Reds, Liverpool. What's happening? I mean, yeah, we had on the day that we're recording this, it's the day after their second game, little headbutt. Red card headbutt from the new, you know, speaking of new toys, it's like, oh, I didn't think I was getting this exactly. He was very good at the first game, but yeah, this is not exactly the most positive showing in game two for Nunez. But what's going on with Liverpool?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, watching that game last night, it was a really interesting match until Nunez headbutted Anderson. I mean, anyway, it was already a pretty good game. Crystal Palace, not very well fancied to win at Anfield, and they were winning at the time. Yeah, 1-0 up, and Nunez had missed two really good chances in the box. Like, obviously, he's been signed to get those goals in the penalty area that maybe Liverpool have been lacking. They often come down the flanks with Salah and Mane and cut
across. He did it week one. He did it. I believe he scored on opening weekend. Yeah.
Yeah, he did. But I mean, the whole incident with the Palace defender Anderson was just, I mean, it was kind of farcical. It was a little bit, it looked a bit like a boxing match where it all goes a bit too heated. But yeah. I mean, the fact that he's, you know, I think he has apologized today. I think he's come out online and apologized to the Liverpool fans and said, you know, obviously I don't want to be known for that kind of thing. But I mean, if you're coming in on your home debut and headbutting a guy, I mean, that's kind of what reputation you'll get. Obviously,
they played the replay and he had like kind of like been like putting his head back on the defender, which is what caused then the defender to come and like sort of like put like be like, what are you doing? And then he comes back with like a headbutt. It almost seems like he's like doing the thing of like just trying to get into his face. And I he's definitely going in like head first. Like, you know, it's definitely a headbutt. I'm not trying to like excuse him because it's like it's so stupid. It's so bad. And they get turned off. Like, very lucky that like Diaz ends up scoring an equalizer to like I'm very excited with Diaz. I think a full season there is going to be super fun. That goal is like, he just dances around everybody and then checks in the net. So like, they're very lucky to come out of that game with like a point, I think.
Yeah, and I think it was, you know, a brilliant goal by Luis Diaz to kind of rescue that point. I mean, when Nunez gets sent off, already losing, you think, even though it's Liverpool, even though it's home, maybe they'll lose now and then we maybe start asking some of these questions about whether they're really ready to challenge for the title again this year. But I mean, I think they are. I think they'll be up there. Obviously, Nunez has got to put his head on the ball rather than on other players. And obviously, yeah, you know, yeah. And, you know, obviously it wasn't like, you know, the most stern headbutt you've ever seen. I mean, I've certainly seen worse in, you know, bare knuckle fighting and all that stuff. But for a football game, generally, don't be putting your head in there against another guy. And Anderson was taller than him as well. So I don't know if he was going to win that fight.
I have to like go with, you know, like, I think I have like, I'm a pro wrestling fan, as you know, Ab. Like, you know, I have to go into this with like, as soon as the announcers are like, oh, that's bad, I have to just sort of be like, okay, that's bad. Like, it is bad. Like, I'm sort of thinking like, yeah, it looks like he goes in head. It looks like he's trying to go nose to nose with him, I think. It's like, what, like, you know, get in his face. And he ends up like headbutting him. And like, whatever. You can talk about like whether Anderson like, sells it, whatever. That's like a very, you know, you can't do it. You can't give someone the opportunity to be able to sell something that you're going to get like red carded for. I just don't, you know, you have to be more careful than that. So I fully blame to Nunez. That whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Anderson made the most of it. I mean, very good selling it was, as you know, as the true WWE fans would say. But yes, compared to something you might see in the fighting realm, not so bad really. But it wasn't ever going to hurt the lad. But obviously, just keep your eye on the ball. Yeah, can't do it. And certainly a red card. I don't think they could have really had any complaints. But they got the draw out of it. So, you know, still unbeaten. I mean, you can spin it two ways. Haven't won a match in two. Still unbeaten in two. This is the thing at this stage of the year. It's very hard to really say where anyone's going to end up. But I'm sure Liverpool will be competing. But they're already 4 points behind Man City. And every point counts in the course of 38 games, doesn't it?
Yeah, I watch a lot of prediction videos that were like the predictions for the rankings. And I saw it was a lot of like, yeah, Man City first, Liverpool second. Even, you know, again, two games even, you know, but that feels like, boy, you started off on the wrong foot when like at the end of the season, it felt like the last two, I think, maybe even three, that they're like just trying to like pray for a Man City loss that never comes, you know. So to put yourself on the back foot immediately feels not great. But yeah, and then I feel like I said this is all over my Twitter, is the handshake heard around the world, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, that was maybe the most intense handshake I've ever seen, certainly in a football game. Yeah. Antonio Conte and Thomas Tuchel really, really gave me a lot of entertainment this weekend. I mean, that's the kind of fight you want to see on the sidelines in any sport, where it's just interesting, it's just exciting. Whether that's, you know, and it was a good game as well. It was an exciting game, Chelsea and Tottenham 2-2 on Sunday. I mean, it was kind of a game worthy of some spicy fighting action on the sides. But that was the Antonio Conte I've wanted to see for a while. I've not seen that fiery Conte for a while.
So, you know, even I saw the handshake. I was like, you know, trying to look it up. I saw that they were like a draw, but what's the, what happened here? Is there history before this game? Is it what happened in this game? What led to this like intense handshake?
Yeah. I mean, well, there's plenty of history anyway. So, I mean, I can give you the kind of the blow by blow account of what happened on the day. But I mean, in the background of it is Antonio Conte is the Tottenham manager. He used to be Chelsea's manager. I think he did win the Premier League as Chelsea manager. And he's a very, very successful coach. He's done it all, really. Big player in his day for Italy and for Juventus. He was one of those combative, you know, like aggressive midfielders who was also very good on the ball. So he's always had that in him, which is why I like seeing that kind of fire coming out with guys who I remember being those kind of players. I mean, like Roy Keane as well when he's getting hit up on the punditry, you know, because he was a big fiery player. But yeah, so Conte used to be the Chelsea manager. Chelsea and Tottenham have never got on. I wouldn't say either of them are like each other's chief rivals. Tottenham, obviously, big rivalry with Arsenal, but they're both London teams, both kind of vying for that third, fourth spot this season, probably. And there's a lot of history there. But then on the day, I don't think Thomas Tuchel, the Chelsea manager, was very happy with the Tottenham goals. Tottenham's first goal came after a foul on Havertz, allegedly, which wasn't given. And then they've gone up the other end and Højbjerg scored. And then the second goal came right at the death, right in injury time. Harry Kane headed it in. And that's when it all really kicked off. But you saw Tuchel make the point, because when Conte celebrated Tottenham's first goal, Conte kind of got in the face of one of the Chelsea coaches, and Tuchel kind of blocked him off and was like getting in his face a bit, and they all had to be separated then. Then when Chelsea went back in front, when Reece James scored, great goal on the counter, Tuchel sprinted down the touchline. You know, he was giving it the fist bumps and all that. He was really making a point of celebrating the goal, not at Conte, but just, you know, you could see that's why he was doing it. And then so when Spurs got the late goal, I think Conte just went mad. And from what I read after the whole incident with the handshake at the end, Tuchel said that he went to shake Conte's hand. Conte shook his hand, but he didn't look at him. So Tuchel wanted some of that classic eye contact and he didn't get it. So really, I mean, they probably just need to, you know, get around a table and hug it out, I think.
Yeah, but, really.
You know, but I think that's what sparked that. Tuchel was kind of like, oh, you're not going to look at me? Then I'm going to hold on to your hand and make you look at me and make a point of this. And that, I did see Conte mouth the words, come on then, which is very English. I've got to say, that's very, very English, like, I'm going to fight you, sort of like, come on then, sort of thing. It was quite funny. So and then I think they both got sent off after the game had ended. I think the referee gave them both red cards.
Oh, really?
So,
You
can send a player off or book them when they're a manager. Anytime that you're in the football arena sort of thing. Someone got booked on the bench last week. Someone got a yellow card and they were on the bench because they were complaining. So I can't remember which game that was. But yeah, that did happen.
The Everton, the derby, I'm pretty sure Klopp, you know the one, Divock Origi like scores at like the last second and Klopp runs out of the field. I think he got, I think he might have also got booked for that and then suspended maybe? I can't remember.
That did happen because Klopp famously sprinted across the pitch, didn't he, to celebrate that. Obviously and the game,
in that sense, the game isn't over, like technically.
Yeah, true.
Right? It's like the goal, it's not an overtime. It's not a walk off. Yeah, you don't have that.
Yeah, no. No, of course. But the managers can get suspended. Yeah. The managers can get suspended now. So they want to be careful there. And obviously, they'll still be able to coach the team, but they might have to miss maybe a game or two from getting sent off. So we'll see what comes of that over the next week or two.
Do you think it's likely that either of them will miss a game over that?
I think they might get a game ban. Yeah, I mean, once the red card's issued, it's kind of the referee's kind of got to just go to the league and just say, here's why I sent them off. And if they've committed something deemed worthy of a suspension, which I suppose they probably have by nearly having a fight, then they might have to just sit out the next game in terms of being actually on the touchline and managing the team on the day. But, you know, they'll still be able to coach them in the week, so it's not too bad.
I was going to ask this before. How many games do you think Nunez will get games, right? He'll get suspended for that.
Yeah, that'll be a 3-game ban, I think, because it's officially violent conduct. So I think he'll be missing for the next 3 games, which Liverpool don't need. Of course, they've already got Jota out injured. So, I mean, they're a bit light on forward options now. They've still got Firmino, though. I think Firmino will probably have to come in. But, I mean, that's not what you want when you've spent 70-odd million on a player.
Firmino started, I believe, the first game, which I thought was a bit, he's typically been coming on as a late sub, but I think he started the opening game. I feel like Liverpool does a thing of like, they don't off, you know, since Firmino, Salah, Mane, they haven't exactly like always just run with like a typical three, but they're losing Nunes for three will be rough. All right, those are the top five stories. What an exciting start to the season. Again, only two games in, but there's lots happening. So fun.
Yeah, it's been a really good start. Really enjoyed it. And I'm just hoping this kind of pace continues into the World Cup, because when it's going to be weird having a break in the middle of it. That's definitely going to be a bit strange. So I'm hoping that the games keep living up to the hype as they have done so far.
I mean, Man City out front, I think highly predicted to win again. Is that your would you put your money on Man City winning the league again?
I'd find it hard to bet against them right now. I don't really want to see that. I mean, I've got nothing against City. I like to see different teams, and you know, if Liverpool can come back this year and have a good season, that'd be great. But I mean, Man City were already the best team, and now they've signed Erling Haaland, and he's made a pretty decent start. So it's going to be hard to catch him, especially if you know Liverpool and Man United are already dropping the ball and losing points. Arsenal are the only ones to stay pace with them so far. Again, I know we've said this a lot, but only two games in, but to have that 4-point gap over Liverpool already is maybe significant. It might end up being 3 or 4 points at the end of the year, and we might say it was all over after 2 weeks.
I know, this is the thing, you can't win the league in the first month, but you can lose it, I think. Very fun. We'll catch up with you later in the season, perhaps. We'll talk some World Cup at some point too. Adam, you want to promote anything you got going on, where people can find you online?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm still plugging away with lower league football, so it's intotheemptynet.com. We're also on Twitter there. It's DRFC_ITEN. If for some reason you listen to this and you want to get into lower league football, a few leagues below the Premier League, some of the stars of the future, some of the players that never quite made it as well, it's a nice little mix. So do check us out if you fancy that.
Amazing. Thanks so much for joining me, Adam.
Thank you very much for having us on.
Well, there you have it. Roller derby and English soccer, a match made in heaven, at least for me. I very much enjoyed this week's episode. Thank you so much for joining me. If you have suggestions for sports that we should be covering here on the Offspeed Podcast, please let me know. I am on Twitter at @HiFromGrace. You can tweet at me. You can send me a direct message. I'm up to a whole lot more over on post-show recaps covering The Sandman, covering A League of Their Own, covering What We Do in the Shadows, and of course, movies each week. We covered Prey. This week, we'll be covering Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. Next week. So looking forward to more summer flicks with Ariel. And I'll be covering House of the Dragon with Mike Bloom every Sunday night. Right after the episode airs, Mike and I will hop on a podcast, give our immediate reactions and very hot takes because there's dragons. And we'll get the podcast out to you as soon as humanly possible. We'll have some guests along the way. So looking forward to that. Once again, I'm on Twitter @HiFromGrace. And that's it. The podcast is over.